You know what else we can get right right now?
Welcome to Go Radio 4.9 live from the Bow Store on Main Street.
You actually got it right this time.
I'm looking at it on
35X
your
or whatever. Well, I had it up on my computer screen before too. You just kind of didn't turn the look. Yeah,
it was consistent.
You know what else we can get right now?
The sponsors.
Yeah, let's do that.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, which are of course Underground Printing, the Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grant, and Lantana Hummus.
Sounds great.
So 49-72.
Yeah, I can't.
Not right.
I can't believe it. What was it, 49-3?
42-7. That's what you predicted that before.
And you made me take it back. I should have just.
You didn't take it back.
No, I did. I gave you another. I gave you a different answer. I gave you like a 24 or 31-17 or something like that. But I believed in my heart it would be 49 to sad field goal.
You believed that the backup quarterback for Penn State would throw a pass not within 20 yards of any Nittany Lion. You believe that in your heart.
I did. I did. Well, no. Actually, I thought that he would be a little bit. I thought Trace McSorley would be more accurate, and therefore he would throw more picks instead of throwing them so far out that Michigan's cornerbacks couldn't even get to them.
Yeah. Well, so I've done the UFRs after a brief delay.
It was understandable.
You get that cable news in your bloodstream, and the next day you're just like,
Yep.
Anyway.
Yep.
So the offense, kind of had its hiccups. They bash down the field in 8 plays, all runs for a touchdown to start off with. And then they have 6 negative outcomes in the whole game, and their next 5 drives are all of them. So they drive for a missed field goal. They drive. They have a turnover on downs. They have 3 consecutive 3 and outs. And so, it's that same pattern from the Wisconsin game, the same pattern from the Michigan State game, where Michigan is dominating.
And they're just not getting points out of it.
Right, and you're like, why is this a 7-point game?
Yeah.
Why is this a 10-point game?
Well, at one point, too, I think they had them tripled up on yardage, and they had a turnover, and they were beating them on special teams as well. So, the hidden yardage and hidden stuff even wasn't there. They didn't convert a 4th-and-2, and they missed a field goal.
Yeah, so that kind of colors the way you feel about this game, but then you kind of go back and you look at it, and it is there's holes. There's stuff that Michigan needs to work at, but overall, the feeling of this offense is much more dynamic, much more unpredictable than I thought, at the beginning of the season we were seeing.
I think they have now. At the beginning of the season, we were still kind of working out who we are, kind of working out what the plays were. And then, there was a whole down G period where we were discovering more and more of that and just doing kind of funky things with it every week. Now it seems like they have a whole suite of plays. They all kind of work together. There's, the down G / belly look, and you can also – and they also run the arc keeper off of that.
Those don't actually go together.
Okay. You know what? It was just a mistake.
You misspoke.
There.
That's
I misspoke.
Fine.
Is what? Yeah. It was. Yeah. No, I meant the belly and the arc read and the split zone all work together as kind of one package.
And so that's a good point. And one of the things that was most interesting to me is Michigan rips off a 19-yard run and a 34-yard run in the second half, and it's not something special that they're doing. They're just running their base play, but. Because they've done so much stuff on the backside, they've done so much belly stuff, they've done so much arc stuff, they're running split zone, and linebackers to the play side of split zone are taking false steps to the backside of split zone. Which doesn't, I've watched a lot of split zone. That doesn't happen very often.
No, and Penn State's linebackers are not the best.
No, but that's something where they're so concerned about all that frippery that's going on in the back that's killing them, all the Patterson pulls, all the belly stuff.
Right.
That they're stepping away from their natural inclination as a linebacker. And then as a coach, you just hey, the front door is going to be open. That's the front door being open.
Right. Right. Well, and like inside zone, they barely run that. And inside zone is the base play that all that stuff is supposed to be working off of. And that's just a run to the front side where you read the backside end. And that play is going to be open for a chunk because they're so good at running belly, because they're so good at running split zone. And the other thing I saw with this one is they were running the arc. Correct me if you, Ryan, get to read your UFR, but they were running the arc, I thought, without running a split zone. So they didn't tip it that way. They just kind of lined both tight ends up and just had one arc.
Often had two tight ends to the arc side, and they would arc both of them.
Right.
And I thought, the first time that happened, the defensive end wasn't expecting to be let free. And he's like, what? And they hand off, and the belly gets 4 yards from the 15, so that's not bad. They run a pin and pull for 3 yards, and then it's third and three, and then it's time to pull.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever approach that Penn State had coming into this game, felt like it was going to be based on that tight end action. Mm-hmm. And Michigan was running the same stuff without giving him their key that they're keying on.
Right.
So Patterson pulls, and that's a touchdown if McCown actually gets a good block on the safety. He doesn't. Michigan is able to pound it in, but I can't tell you how many times I've seen Michigan offenses kind of run something into the ground and then change.
Okay.
And this was Michigan anticipating that there would be a counterpunch to their arc stuff and switching it up so those counterpunches weren't being triggered.
I mean, well, they've been doing that all season. I think they pick up really quickly on what their keys are.
This has not been something that the Harbaugh era has quite done. A lot of what they've done is like, the first year when they're like in a T formation against Maryland,
mm-hmm.
and then they're doing something completely different the next day.
Right.
And they're doing something completely different 3 weeks from now. This feels a little bit different because it's not just like, okay, we have a different package of something you haven't seen before. Try to figure it out. This is iterating the offense.
This is right. Little tweaks to mess with the things that you do.
Right.
Right.
Speaking of little tweaks.
Yeah.
Joe Moorhead
is missing.
No longer in the building. So
could you tell?
We talked about this kind of on the Monday podcast where last year they get the big run. Right at the beginning of the game because they dupe Rashawn Gary and they do the wildcat thing with Saquon Barkley where he's now the vertical guy running instead of McSorley. The next five times they run at 3 yards a pop. Why are you still running that the year after?
Because it's in the playbook and it was so – this guy was so – you got a genius come through. He runs all these – puts these things in. I think the players know the playbook better than the coaches do.
Well, it's just – they didn't feel like they were iterating.
Yeah.
They had a lot of problems that they're going through.
The idea that sprung it is gone. The guy who put it in there to mess with a certain thing that he saw Michigan was going to, or anticipated that Michigan was going to do, he's gone, and now it's just a play in their playbook because they're trying to run the Moorhead offense.
Right. And this is the Wile E. Coyote year too.
Yeah.
So like what happens next year? They don't have
So they got Tommy Stevens back next year. So they're going to have
but that guy's not McSorley. Like.
No, he's not McSorley, but I mean it's going to be a more gradual drop off. I wonder what happens after that. And the other thing I noticed about this game is this is the first generation of defensive linemen who were not recruited by Larry Johnson at Penn State.
That is a good point. And they were Yetur Gross-Matos is going to have a ton of like flashy counting stats.
Yeah.
But he should not be all Big Ten because he is terrible against the run.
I wonder if Uche, if he was in there every single play, would be looking like that.
But like he was just such a non-factor.
Yeah.
Like anytime Michigan got their hands on him, it was completely over. And, the two defensive tackles were just kind of pushable.
Yeah.
And if Michigan got a more even day from Sean McCown, I think they really, really rip him instead of just getting 250 yards on the ground.
And, like, we've been through an entire generation. It's been, like, 30 years since Penn State did not have monsters on the defensive line.
Teams that, like, lost to Akron and stuff were probably not.
And they still had good defensive lines in the rest of the day. And they were, when they were running spread HD, and, like, they had no idea what they were doing in that program, they still had good defensive lines. As long as they had Larry Johnson, they had good defensive lines, and I think they were still – even like Chris Zettel was there after he left.
All right. Well, anyway, that's not really about Michigan. That's about Penn State. So,
yeah,
we saw Shea Patterson come out and have his best game on the ground. So I don't think that there was a single missed Reed.
And, okay. You know, there were a couple I wanted him to pull, but I think both sides of the Reed were fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that would be the correct Reed?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Correct, but like maybe not like there were opportunities to get even more from pulling.
All right. Well,
yeah.
And when he pulled the ball and he took off and ran, he didn't feel like McSorley, who slid down first short of a first down. Like he was taking the contact and he was getting yards after contact, and he juked a safety in the hole on Michigan's like exclamation point drive. That felt like maybe the passing stuff wasn't 100% on point, wasn't exactly where he wanted it, but it felt like he made a real leap forward over the bye week in that regard. And this kind of goes back to McCune. I think Michigan changed their run game midseason.
Okay.
And I think large portions of that have been heaped on, obviously, Patterson. And the other guy who this changes almost everything for is Sean McCune. So now he's got to run split zone.
Right.
He's got to run the arc stuff. And he's got to run not quite split zone blocks because he's not the kickout guy, because the kickout guy is being held by the quarterback, where he's got to actually get into the hole and get climbed.
It's all H-back stuff.
Right, but he's not.
But he's never been an H-back before.
Right, so he's mostly been in line.
Yeah.
And they haven't really run this style of offense. And so now on every play, he's got to figure out which version of the split zone block he's running. And then he's got to actually execute it. And that's been iffy sometimes. So there's one play that I caught where it's not actually a read.
Mm-hmm.
Like Patterson's not looking at anybody. And he arc blocks. So not ideal.
So, I mean, McCune, I mean, I think we were expecting big things this year because he had such a good year last year. But he's just a redshirt sophomore.
Well, and he's, when he makes contact with somebody, it goes pretty well for a tight end. Like, he's not
right
the fully mechanized version of Devin.
So I'm not going to expect Zach Gentry to become a major blocker anytime soon. And that seems just like part of his makeup.
Well,
McCune will get, I think there's just so much, there's so many little tweaks you have to make when you're a blocker, especially a blocker who's finding guys in space like an H-back does. That, like, I think that's why you don't see fullbacks until their junior and senior years. They're kind of quasi-offensive linemen.
You fullbacks?
Fullback and H-back are related positions.
Okay.
And the blocks are similar. You're coming at guys from different angles.
Sure.
You kind of have to set those blocks up. You have to see things in front of you. It's a lot harder to do than an inline tight end who usually is just kind of on a crack block or double teaming an end or something like that.
In any case, so McCune actually came into this season ranked like 26th in tight end blocking as a run blocker by Pro Football Focus, and Pro Football Focus is not perfect, but I thought that provided a little bit of a baseline, and I think we see that when McCune actually makes contact with somebody. Usually I'm not handing out minus ones for him because he got blown through or lost a guy. What happens is he's executing the entirely wrong block, and I have to minus two him. So he ends up with, like, plus 10, minus 11 in this game, which is a completely insane number, like a total. Like, 21 points of of blocking there is just unprecedented, I think. And some of it is – and I think that really emphasizes how much has been put on his plate with this new arc zone.
And that was the way they chose to attack Penn State, too. I think he used I forget the term, but there was a they do what Wisconsin does, where they create a whole bunch of a ton of gaps by just adding more tight ends to the line, and that was kind of the way they wanted to attack them. Is just there's so many different zone gaps that you have to protect that you never know where they're coming through, and that puts a lot on the tight ends because they're actually making key blocks that you would normally have like an offensive tackle make.
The trip tight end package?
Yeah. Or the trip tight end package or anytime you bring a guy across the formation, too.
Well, I mean, the trip tight end package, so, I mean, often what that's doing is it's allowing your interior line to actually get doubles on defensive tackles because you're spreading the front so much. So, like, there was a run where Higdon got flipped around 180 degrees by a hand.
And yeah.
That was an inside zone from the trip tight end package. And, you know, there's a hole right up in the A-gap because they're trying to split to cover this weird front. And it's been pretty effective. I think most of it's been effective, and I think it's pretty encouraging.
Also encouraging, an RPO.
Yeah, they threw an RPO. And it worked. And hopefully they don't do it for the next 2 weeks.
Those disappear. Just a quick little reminder that the Ohio State game plan is coming, and it's probably going to be a good one.
And it's probably not going to have a lot of RPOs in it because it's too obvious.
Right.
And Ohio State already had like the game against Minnesota where they couldn't defend it to save their lives. So it's like stick and move, and I kind of feel like Michigan over the past, I guess, 4 weeks because they had a bye, like they had all these critical games, and they really – I think did a very good job of putting out game plans for all three that were going to be good against those defenses. So, all hail Ed Warner.
Yeah. Also, all hail Don Brown. I don't know if we're.
Yeah, let's talk about the defensive side of the ball. Obviously, Michigan has a complete and total domination. My grades kind of came out like I was telling them up, but I'm like, this is not as emphatic. In
was it high RPS or was it high?
No, the RPS was very low, but like, you know, Bush ended up at zero. Hudson ended up at zero. Like the coverage
Bush,
metric.
Really?
Bush, I
can't remember a negative play for Bush. I remember him.
There
like,
were a couple of coverage issues that he had. Okay. I thought that the RPO on the first play actually was supposed to be a trap where he drops back into coverage because Cannell came up in a way that is Michigan has not shown so far this year to contain the edge guy. Mm-hmm. So Michigan was going to have Devin Gill there one-on-one against the quarterback if he kept, and it was a run. So I just kind of felt like that was a devious thing Don Brown put in the playbook, expecting RPO in the first play, got it, and then...
And it just didn't run it right.
And then we didn't execute it. So that might be wrong, but, you know, I try to put together plays that don't work and look funny and see how they would work, and that was my explanation for that. So, you know, he had just a couple of issues where, you know, the tight end breaks inside of him and pops open, and it was a little bit odd. And I don't think that's going to be the case going forward. But, you know, the thing that I kind of felt after I had tallied this all up is that, okay, the defensive line just sucked up everybody's positives. So there wasn't really much to go around.
Oh, darn.
It's like, you know, you get four sacks in every other play except that one drive at the end of the first half. McSorley is being chased by goblins. So Josh Uche is obviously kind of a big headliner coming out of this after two more sacks. He's now up to 17th in the country. And the second sack where he kind of loops around and goes right up the middle, the explosion there, I mean, it just continues just to leap off the page when you watch that video. It's just like, yep, that guy's pretty fast.
And the coaches have been talking, now especially because we're seeing it in sack stats, the coaches are talking more, but they've been saying for a long time that he had that. They just wanted him to get like big enough in order to be useful as a defensive end if he gets locked on the field. Or I guess it's even just linebacker size. And he is definitely tracking towards future Winovich, if not even better.
Yeah, and Gary made his return, and
yeah, I wanted to ask you about that.
Well, he looked like basically the same guy who he was before the injury. Like his edge rush is good, but doesn't quite get there.
So before the injury, he was kind of protecting his shoulder, or before he went out for the injury, I should say, he was protecting his shoulder. Was that something visible in film, or
no? Not really. I mean,
okay, so he's back.
I mean, I don't know if we're going to see him for a whole lot of snaps against Rutgers.
No, that's fine.
Just. It's
we'll get to Rutgers offense in a bit. I don't think we're gonna need that much.
Do we need to do that?
Yes, it's. I did the research. I spent a lot of tired post electoral time doing it.
You did it, and I was like, I should have. I told him not to do it because why would you do that?
Because I am a committed individual who watches.
You have a family, man.
Yep, and they know that during football season I have to watch film. God. And I have to break it down. And
that's kind of pushing it. Honey, I got to watch Rutgers in case they do something.
Yeah.
Did they do anything?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
But anyway, back to the tail end of the Penn State game. You know, one of the things that jumped out of my grading is that the cornerbacks had basically no points except for Watson, who had a couple of incidents. And go back and you look at the box score, three catches from receivers. One of them is a slant that I think was Devin Gill getting out of position. One of them was actually against Tyree Cannell. One of them was kind of that heave at the end of the game on fourth and two. None of those were against the cornerbacks. Michigan cornerbacks gave up zero receptions in this game. Probably could have been, should have been two.
Well, Pro Football Focus put out that the number, the, like, you know, quarterback rating when targeted this week, and Brandon Watson was right on the top of the list with zero. And I'm like, maybe you weren't watching the game, because we know we had, he had the stumble. But right. Other than the stumble, it's like, I mean, that continues to be a theme of this year, that like every week we wait for the Pro Football Focus cornerback numbers to come out because they're always ridiculous.
Yeah, and they shut down KJ Hamler. Hamler had one catch.
Yeah.
And you know, that was my concern going into the game. It was like, okay, we had the James Prochet game where he gets like 160 yards receiving. And Michigan has gotten better and better at defending slots. But what is it going to, what's going to happen when you find a guy who's probably an elite college slot? Well, Michigan is still trapping those slants. And there was one, I think a 1 yard scramble where they're running double slants and Michigan has linebacker on the inside of one route, the defensive back falling back into the other one. And it's that trap that almost got Michigan interception at Michigan State. Mm-hmm. And McSorley is able to not pull the trigger on it, but then he has no other ideas and he has to go get what he can. And that's, you know, last year it didn't really feel like the slot fade issue ever got resolved.
Yeah.
In the offseason, they have a plan, they go and do it. And now the slot fade issue is resolved, and they have the slant issue, and now the slant issue is resolved.
Yeah. Well, and they threw the one slot fade, and Metellus so dominates the route that he got a flag by getting grabbed by Hamler. I mean, he was doing some pushing.
It was
neutral, and, yeah.
But it was a bad call. Anyway,
I'm not getting into the call, but I'm getting into the point that
yeah, and we saw one
they tried a slot fade, and you're just going into the cornerback's chest.
Yeah, we saw one of those against Michigan State, which was completely dominated because you can't run a slot fade against that technique.
Right, so every once in a while, they try to prop it out again, and it's over.
I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought because I was trying to say something.
I was just thinking about Uche coming around the corner again. Don Brown, I don't know if you saw this in the UFR, too. I thought Don Brown was very prepared for Penn State's check with me. So they would come out. They come out with their offense. They look around. They see what if McSorley likes what he sees. He runs the play that they called, or runs the next play in there, however the system works. If he doesn't, he checks with the sideline and gets a play. And I thought Brown did a great job this year and didn't do a great job last year of changing up the play after there's a check with me. So like they give McSorley one look. They get the check from the sideline. They come back and Michigan changes their look. And sometimes it was just subtle, and sometimes it was shifting guys entirely around to a different place.
I remember. So yeah. Michigan, to defend the slants, have had to pull back kind of their linebacker aggressiveness. So you're mm-hmm. not seeing Gill blitz. You're not seeing Bush blitz nearly as much. And that's been fine. They've managed. They're like the top sack team in the country on a per down basis per SCP plus. They're number one by a huge margin on passing downs because of that rush package. So they haven't really had to add guys to the pass rush to get quarterbacks under duress. So that's allowed them to basically cover everything, and now they're completely impregnable and will never give up any points ever again.
So we want Notre Dame?
No, we don't. Let's take Texas State in the first round. Is that going to happen? Probably not.
No, but I would love to add the Donemers to the revenge tour at the end of this year.
Well, that's going to take going to take some doing, right? Clemson would have to lose.
No.
Because Bama and Clemson are going to be locked in at 1-2.
Okay, so then
so
we take out Clemson as the number three, and they go in the number
they're not going to be
they're not going to take out Bama.
Well, they're not going to be the number four if we're the other playoff team.
Right.
Because they'll be
no, I know,
to win
I know,
for us.
I know. All right, well, I don't want to say
all this playoff muttering is very stupid because everybody's like, what if this crazy thing happens? And I'm like, there's a 1% chance that all these teams actually get to the end without losing another game.
I know. We're still rooting for the Northwestern to make it with 5 wins to Indianapolis.
Yeah,
still a chance for that.
All right, we got to take a break. We're going to come back and hopefully talk to Steve Lorenz, but I'm not making any promises.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win.
We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go: Homeshore Lending. Fair and honest, Homeshore Lending is local, efficient, and small enough that you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest, owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company based here in Ann Arbor on State Street, but we serve the entire state of Michigan, helping people buy or refinance their homes. We care about doing things the right way and treating people the right way, but we also care deeply about the Wolverines, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the biggest Michigan fans I know.
Hi, I'm Cooper. I'm 10.
I'm Colby, and I'm 8.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Homeshore Lending at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HOMESURELENDING.com. Or call Matt at 734-531-9950. Homeshore Lending. NMLS number 1161358. Equal housing lender.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 4.9, live from the Bow Store on Main Street. That was...
That warms my heart.
Pitch Perfect or something?
No, that's the U of M, what is it, in 2015, they were on like that's the theater and dance troupe for Michigan.
It's
Michigan
not
students.
Like an acapella group?
No, what I did for music this time is I grabbed all sorts of Michigan music performers. So that's the song and dance people, and then we'll have some other ones on later.
It's it's very Michigan.
Yeah.
Do we have Steve Lorenz?
Hang on a second. I think we have to unmute him. Oh, look at that. What are you listening to there, Steve?
We do not have Steve Lorenz.
Steve, are you there?
This is a very professional podcast.
This is, and we are getting feedback from Steve on the other side. Steve, are you there?
What are you guys doing?
I don't know. Steve, we can't hear you yet.
Why don't you, like, plug him in and then unmute him? That would be my approach.
I got him plugged in, and all I'm doing is I'm getting the podcast fed back to us right now. All right. We're going to stop that for a second and try to get Steve on the old-fashioned way here. Steve, what are you doing?
All right.
I don't know why.
Did you guys think about practicing this before?
Oh, we practiced it, and it worked great.
Did it?
It did, yeah.
Did it?
It did. I don't know why Steve is playing our podcast back to us. There goes again.
It's not Steve because he's not on the phone right now.
No, it's playing it on my.
We're troubleshooting.
We are troubleshooting live on the pod. It's a very visual podcast. If you see me panicking right now, that's because it's such a visual podcast. Steve, are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Oh, there
I am.
There we go.
For some reason, I had everything turned off, and yet you
were
still...
The seventh try is the charm.
And you
all
were like...
I heard was,
yeah.
I just heard some weird, like, remix of the Victors, and I just set the phone down and waited for it to finish, and then I heard Seth, and then I didn't hear anything, so...
Yeah, you were sending our podcast back to us for some
reason.
Okay. That's why you said, what are you listening to? I was, like, going to say it's dead silent in this room right now. So...
What a wonderful reintroduction to Inside the Kirkwood Blue Line.
Yes,
with Steve Warren. So we thought we'd pick it up with recruiting for you. Obviously, Michigan is putting the finishing touches on a class that could crack the top five, maybe.
I suppose you could say yeah. I mean, just because it looks like they're going to take more guys than what we would have probably said 6 months ago, right? So, if they continue to win. I think it's definitely a possibility, actually.
So you recently put in a crystal ball for Zach Harrison, the number four player in the country, a defensive end out of Columbus, Ohio, to Michigan. I know you have a pretty high bar to actually put in a crystal ball, so you're feeling pretty good. But are we feeling how good are we feeling?
Yeah, I mean, pretty good. I would suspect that Michigan is definitely out in front here. I think they've been out in front for him personally for quite a while. I think the biggest thing was maybe getting the family on board. Mom has publicly said that she's open to him going anywhere, but it's been pretty clear behind the scenes that she prefers Ohio State, I think. And whether that's because she likes the program or because it's right in his backyard, I don't know. I don't really know, but I guess it's really probably not that relevant. Michigan appears to have calmed those fears. You know, it's still not that long of a drive for a family to want to come up and watch a handful of games every year. So I think Michigan, Al Washington, man, I mean, just an amazing job. I think about a year ago, if we were talking last year today, besides that they may have been struggling a little bit, also they were not even a factor in this recruitment at all. They've gone from probably maybe the back end of a top five, maybe not even that, to having the lead, in my opinion, right now. Basically, Al Washington's really been the primary driver behind that. So you get Sharon Moore, who reels in Daxon Hill. You have Al Washington, who's been the primary here. And hard not to say they haven't hit two home runs with those guys as far as the recruiting aspect goes.
And that was something that they really needed to do after last year. They needed to get some up-and-coming guys who were just going to go pound the trail.
100%. I'm with that the whole way. I was with that when they got hired. It was clear that they were, I'm not going to say they were recruiting based hires because they've both done a good, you know, Al Washington's been kind of the guy with Josh Uche this year for the most part. I know Madison mentioned that this week, but hard not to say, yeah, two young, energetic guys that, you know, there's a certain type of assistant who likes recruiting. And these guys are those guys, much like Chris Partridge was when he first got on board, is somebody who just loves the game of recruiting, likes to, you know, be the top guy, guys that want to be at the top of the, like, we do the recruiter rankings every year. I suspect these both of those assistants are guys that would really like to be up near the top of that list. So home run hires, but I agree. I think it was a much needed, you know, you had guys on the staff. It was more picky and choosy. You had guys on the staff like Madison still grinds. Partridge is Partridge, obviously. Jay Harbaugh has obviously done a great job this cycle and has put them in some races in the past. But I think rounding them even more into shape as far as the recruiting aspect goes, I think was necessary, and it's obviously paid off.
The other five-star type prospect Michigan is going after, I know 24/7 has a little bit lower, is Corvarus Crouch, who just came in for a visit. He had some weather concerns, I think, but he was saying that Michigan is probably at the top with Clemson, without Clemson. He's got visits set up to Tennessee and Clemson in the next 2 weeks, and then he's going to silently commit and then announce it at
somewhere
at the All-Star game. And, you know, people are saying, like, it's looking pretty good for Michigan, but the last visit to Clemson rather looms. How do you see this recruitment playing out?
So I think, yeah, I mean, if he was signing today, I would be choosing Michigan, but you can't obviously ignore those two visits. I think the consensus, you know, with the guys on our site, with Sam and Bryce and Newkirk and I, has pretty much been that this might be an in-home deal. You know, this one might get settled on the in-home visits. Again, much like with Harrison, I think it's where he prefers is Michigan. And I think even our Clemson affiliate, Anna Hickey, who does an awesome job up there, has said multiple times that she thinks his heart is actually at Michigan. It's again, it's proximity. He's got family who wants to watch him play. You know, so it's, again, that part of it plays sort of a role. I know, I think that they kind of got over the weather thing on this visit. I know his former high school coach, Sam Greiner, who now coaches at a nearby program just outside of Charlotte, has still played a big role in this recruitment, which is great news for Michigan, because I think he is in Michigan's corner. Again, not pushing Michigan, but a guy, I think, who has been an asset for Michigan in this race. So, as of today, yeah, I would probably say Michigan, to be honest with you, but not at a crystal ball point just because of that Clemson visit. He'll visit Tennessee. I would be surprised if Tennessee kind of vaulted themselves back in. They've been in it for a while, but I just, you know, he's been kind of big on wanting to play at a winning program. And while Jeremy Pruitt, maybe he'll turn around at some point, it's hard to, you know, maybe fully buy in this early, you know, because he'll only be there for 3 or 4 years anyway. So
what do you think his best position is?
Oh, man. We would talk a lot about Miles Jack as sort of that, like a primary linebacker who will get some legitimate carries at the running back position. I think he could be a great player on either side. I'd probably, though, with that, that's the thing. With a guy who could be good on either side, it almost seems to always make more sense to put him on defense. Because I think sometimes those guys are who can be that great at that defense are fewer and far between than they might be on offense. Then you got to consider you got Charbonnet at running back already. You may have Eric Gray, and but though between those two guys who I believe would honestly probably both play next year, you know, they're pretty good at running back right now. So I think it'd be primarily defensively. Again, like I said, I think Miles Jack has been kind of the comparison for us, a guy who'd probably be a primary linebacker, but was a guy that you could give some carries to. But
so you
whether
think,
it's, yeah.
You think he can move enough to be a middle linebacker? I just kind of think of him like as an Uche type if he plays defense, but
I think that's apt. I think that's what it'd be. I guess it would be like sort of that hybrid linebacker defensive end type deal, I suppose. Okay. That's probably, so when I say linebacker, I'm not thinking like Mike, I suppose. It was more of the, yeah, probably an outside guy for sure.
Sure. You just mentioned Eric Gray. Obviously, he's been taking a lot of visits. There's kind of a split between various people about how likely it is he ends up in the class. And you guys have been on the more optimistic end of that. But you really want him to come up for the Indiana game, I think, if you're going to stick to that.
Yeah, that's where I've been at. So it's for me, from our end, I guess I would say it's more of what we've heard from Michigan directly as far as their confidence that they think they're still going to sign him at the end of the day. For me, I've kind of just reported that and kind of waited. You know, he's visited a few other programs this year. He's had multiple opportunities to come up to Ann Arbor and hasn't done it yet. He hasn't been up since he committed in July. And, you know, so I'm not saying the clock's ticking in that regard, but at the same time, it's, you know, he hasn't seen a game at the Big House yet at all. And you think for a guy who is fully committed, you know, that they may want to do that at some point. I know he had originally planned to come to the Penn State game, and that kind of backed out for whatever reason. And, you know, I think Michigan still, I think they say would probably say it's a greater than 50% chance in their mind that they're still going to sign him. But I'm definitely kind of wavering a little bit. I think if he comes up again, I think they could seal the deal, because every time he's come up to the to visit, it's been awesome. I mean, really, his recruitment was so weird because Michigan had a huge lead early on. He camped a couple of years ago. Michigan offered. Michigan was way ahead. But I think at the time, they didn't know what their numbers were going to be, so they kind of cooled off a little bit for a while. And if you remember, he kind of popped back onto the scene again this summer after sort of a quiet time period there between the two parties, and then came right in, got him up for one more visit, and then he committed almost immediately. So, you know, I think it's a deal. If they can get him back up, I think things might end up being all right there. It's just a matter of, you know, getting him up. That's and here's the thing. That was his official over the summer, right? And this where you get into that whole, when do you take a guy up for an official versus an unofficial? And that's kind of starting to play a role in some of these recruitments.
The other five-star-ish type guy that is on the board for Michigan is George Karlaftis. I guess there's one more. But Karlaftis is committed to Purdue. Seems pretty solid as long as Brohm sticks around. Why haven't they fired Petrino yet? You don't know this, but go ahead.
That's kind of what we're all wondering, is if it's going to happen. Here's the thing, though. Purdue just got another four-star yesterday, receiver out of Louisville, right by where Rondell Moore played, who can squat 600 pounds, by the way. And
this other guy or Rondell?
Rondell Moore can squat 600 pounds.
I know that.
You've heard that. If you've heard that during the telecast.
Did you know that Tom Zivakowski was a boxer?
Yeah, I do remember that, actually. Yeah, and did A.J. Hawk's sister dated Brady Quinn, too.
That's true.
But anyway, so Purdue just picked up another four-star commit. They're actually recruiting at a pretty dang high level for Purdue right now. I almost wonder, even if Louisville came calling, like, he may be in a better spot to stay at this point, even if Louisville threw a bit more money at him.
So it won't be a money thing for Brohm. You know, his dad was the head coach at, I think, Rondell Moore High School. He's like a legend in the area. He played at Louisville. His brothers played at Louisville. Like, this is like, if he goes, it's because mama called.
Sure. You know, that makes sense.
It's like, and if Louisville makes the move, it's because they know that this is a guy who might be at Louisville for 30 years, no matter how much success he has. So that's the thing that would make a move, I think.
Well, if that's the case, you know, if he does leave, and this is where Michigan was very smart in this recruitment, they're the other team. I mean, I think if he left, Michigan would have a very, very significant chance all of a sudden. I think the chances would kind of flip, because right now, you know, yeah, he's solid at Purdue. I mean, there's really hasn't been much leeway there. I think he's still in communication with Michigan, but I think it's very tepid at this point. But if things change, I mean, yeah, all of a sudden Michigan looks pretty good there. And you're talking about an epic potential for their defensive line haul. So, and again, he's a guy you take all day, obviously. No hesitation there. I mean, we have him, I think, as a top 10 overall player.
Yes.
There's been some comparisons to Bosa in that regard, but I think he's a little bit bigger, though. I think he's a guy that might end up sliding inside, to be honest with you. But either way, five-star level guy. But yeah, I think it does. It fully depends on what happens there. I don't know, like, isn't there a huge buyout for Petrino too, right?
And it's like, it's a hurdle. I mean, it's pretty much a FBS standard buyout now. It's like $14 million, which sounds like an absolute huge amount of money, but you know, there were, I think, three or four seven-digit buyouts last year. Okay. So like, they might have some issues because, like, what's his face, criminal sex vampire, is suing
Patino?
Him. Patino, yeah. So they fired him for cause, and like, they fired their AD, and so like, they've had a lot of expenses, but. To me, if I'm Louisville and I can get Brohm, I'm going to do that, because, like, I know, like, there's a high probability he's going to be a success. There's a high probability he's going to be around for 20 years. So it seems like if I'm in charge of that university, that's the move I'm making. But we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I just realized that Brian Van Gorder is their defensive coordinator. And they I don't know if you saw that Georgia Tech.
I did.
Ran for what, 550 yards and didn't
pass
for 1 yard? Yeah, you know, it's like, hold there. I mean, I didn't think they be this bad. I mean, they're horrible. They're one of the, that'd be one of the worst FBS teams there is right now.
Yes, it's them and Rutgers, basically. One of the surprise visitors last weekend, well, the surprise visitor, was Kalen DeLoach, a Florida State commit. And he was in a picture with Crouch. And Crouch, no hat, open jacket, smiling. And DeLoach is smiling, too. But he's got, like, a hoodie on. He's got a hat on. He's got, like, a one of those gator things. And I'm like, that kid is not coming to Michigan. But it seems like after the visit, Michigan might be the favorite for him.
Yep. So I you know, I reported that immediately, like, I think during the visit. And I know you, your tweet about,
I was just making a joke,
play
right?
Ecuador. No, I'm with you. No, but based solely on the picture, I think I was probably with you there.
Go ahead.
His dad, is a great guy. He had been in contact with him for months. And this is a recruitment where I think this is a classic. This is what happens when you win. You can get back in with a guy like this. And he's really probably honestly been, as far as pure linebackers go, probably been their number one or number two guy for the entire process.
So he's a Florida State commit. He's about 200 pounds. He's a little bit undersized. And he's the top linebacker on their board. Does that remind you of anybody?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, he can fly. And that's what they've wanted him for. They love him. You know, Al Washington, again, another recruitment there where he's been all over it. He's been one of the primaries there. I know Chris Partridge has been involved a little bit too. And yeah, I mean, this is, again, like I said, this is where winning pays off. You know, you can, all of a sudden you're right back in the race for the top linebacker on your board. And he's a guy, actually, the funny thing is he's ranked and rated very similar to what Bush Jr. was too, coming out of high school. Yeah. As kind of a low four-star, high three-star kind of guy. And yeah, that's exactly what they're recruiting him for, as just a blazer, you know, and that just put more speed on the defense. And yeah, I mean, I think coming out of the visit, I think Michigan is looking pretty solid right now. I mean, it's hard to believe that, you know, we're talking about all these elite guys all of a sudden that they're in such great shape for, but they really are. Michigan, I think, finished second when he committed to Florida State anyway. Florida State, obviously, really, really struggling. Hard to know what's going to happen there long term, I suppose, if you're a high school prospect. Michigan looks like they're in a different spot right now. So we'll see. I think he's still got a couple more visits to go. He visits Bama, and I think he goes back to Florida State. Not sure if he's a take for Bama right now. I'm not 100% sure. We're actually trying to find that out right now. But, yeah, Michigan – I mean, again, that was one I think I reported over the weekend. I was actually pretty close to a crystal ball, but I wanted to wait because I knew it was going to take a couple more. So no. We'll see how that finishes out there.
So one spot at which Michigan has not had guys come out of the woodwork is wide receiver. They have one outside receiver in this class, Quintel Kent, who's kind of a sleeper type. They have kind of three guys on their board, Jalen Ellis, a Baylor commit, Cornelius Johnson, who I think people expect to go to Stanford, and Kyle Ford, who's on the West Coast. And this could be a moment where Michigan's able to jump in during USC turmoil and get some kid that everybody expects to go to USC. But he kind of seems like he's going to stick on the West Coast. You know, with just Ronnie Bell last year, with just Kent this year, it kind of feels like wide receiver, outside wide receiver, should be a priority. Do you see Michigan getting one of these guys? And if not, is there like a mystery name on the board who might pop up?
So, as things stand right now, I wouldn't bet. On any of the guys that you named, maybe Ellis of the three, even though I'd say they're probably running second for Cornelius Johnson. Stanford is probably the school there. I think that's where his dad went to school. He just said his official, which will be after the season. So, I mean, Michigan's getting him back up again. One thing they have there is his dad went to Stanford. Mom went to Michigan, though, so there's some familiarity there. But also a satellite camp kid. Michigan's kind of the first school that found him. And I don't know if that's something he's not forgotten or has kind of kept with him throughout, but they definitely were like the first program to identify him at one of the satellite camps a couple of years ago, which, you know, it amazes me now. You start to interview 2020 kids, 2021s, which, yeah, we're unfortunately there already.
They offered a 2023 or something, didn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, it's insane. But
it's like six.
Yeah, I'm not going to – I'll wait a couple of years before I even contemplate – wanting to talk to a poor kid that young, you know, who's going to be. So, but you'd be shocked at how many of these kids may have went to one of these camps when they made that big run early on. These kids that when they were in seventh or eighth grade were going to these camps, and it's really paying off, I think, in a lot of ways, you know, with just guys who are interested, right? Which is all you're really asking for at a camp like that. Johnson's one of those guys. went to one of the early camps. They love him. I don't know if you've watched his senior film. I think he might be better. I think he's right up there. I think he's a top 100 guy for sure. And I don't know. I think between him and Ellis, but maybe Johnson. I don't know. That one's hard to tell. As far as other names, no. None that pop out to me necessarily. There was a kid named Trevon Raphael out of Salon, Ohio, was a guy that they were looking at. Things seem to have cooled off there. But I agree. I think it is outside spot is definitely where they want to take one more guy. I mean, it'd be really surprising to me if they didn't, even with, you know, a little, not as much room as there maybe would be normally, but.
And Daxon Hill is a safety all the way, right?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt there. Yeah.
I think we knew that. I just want to make sure that it was clear.
Yeah, no, he's a straight up, he's a safety all the way for them and will probably play significantly next year. So, but I don't know. I mean, the one thing is though, I mean, the Ronnie Bell evaluation looks pretty solid so far. So I'm wondering if maybe they have a couple names in the wings that they're kind of keeping to themselves before maybe they move in and strike on
Who's that Ronnie Bell type kid who's also kind of from Kansas City? He's got a hyphenated name.
Hickson. I think they're recruiting him defensively, though. Okay. And that's where it's like, and that's the thing is like they're having these new names are popping up, but they really only have such limited room to where even a guy like, you know, they're after DeLoach, who I think is their number one guy. They're still recruiting Tommy Eichenberg, too, the Boston College commitment, who's a 4-star out of Ohio. You know, I don't know if they'd have room for both of those guys as it stands right now. You know what I mean? So you know how it is at near the end of it, there's so much shuffling, things change. I don't know if Hickson's a guy they would consider a receiver. I know he told us that he was told they were recruiting him defensively. So,
okay.
You know, but yeah, no, that's actually a good name to remember because he may be a guy they circle back on or maybe pursue going forward. But like I said, I think at receiver kind of feel like they feel confident in who they're evaluating. And I just suspect that they're going to see where things go with these other guys, but that they may have a few names in the wings waiting. Ford, yeah, I think he's West Coast guy all the way. If it's not USC, I could see it being Washington or maybe even Colorado, actually. Colorado was his first offer and has recruited the absolute crap out of him, and he's actually been very receptive to it. You know, unlike some elite guys kind of forget about some of those schools that offer early on, but he seems enamored enough with Colorado to kind of continue to give him a chance, so... plus, you know, with SC, like even with Clay, if they keep Clay Helton or not, SC always closes so strong every cycle anyway. So I could still see him ending up there for all we know.
The other spot at which Michigan kind of seems like they definitely want one more guy at the spot is tackle. After Bryce Benhart went off the board to Nebraska, their options seem to be Trevor Keegan and Danielson Ike. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's where I go with.
Okay.
That's what I say.
It kind of feels like Keegan's the guy on the front burner, but it seems like kind of one of those recruitments where it's like, well, if you were going to commit to Michigan, why haven't you committed yet? Is that the right vibe or not?
I think to an extent, I mean, because there's a lot of family connections there. My crystal ball's still on Michigan. I don't think I would, you know, he could still very well end up in Michigan, but I don't necessarily feel super confident in that right now. This one just seems to have gone back and forth a lot. I mean, now you got Georgia's involved. Penn State still kind of sticking around. Ohio State was not even really supposed to be a factor that much anymore. Then he popped up there about a month ago for an official visit. I think Clemson is actually kind of in there as well. He's a guy that he's sort of the most enigmatic kid left on their board, in my opinion. But again, that doesn't mean that they're not going to get him or that they don't have a shot, because that's the thing is they may end up out of nowhere just grabbing him. It's just not a guy like he's been really difficult to get a read on for pretty much everybody. So, because I know for a while it actually looked like Georgia was going to come out of nowhere, which they want to do every once in a while and snag him. But again, he is not done with his official visits yet. I think he's got a couple more, but kind of a weird recruitment. And that's why I've been kind of saying lately that Ike may end up actually being the guy just because of the uncertainty with Keegan. You know, and another, I think, more of a high ceiling guy that might take a little bit. You know, I think Keegan closer to it. Not that they're really in that big of a need of a year one guy at this point, which is great news if you're a Michigan fan. You know,
amazing news.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, so you know, so they can afford to maybe take a guy that's going to take a little bit. So, and that's what I look at with EK. I think Keegan would be closer to a year one guy, but again, not maybe in at that quite at that level. So,
The other guy that's kind of on the board, but we haven't heard much about right now, is Isaiah Foskey, who's kind of a tight end, defensive end type recruit. Any update on him?
I mean, Michigan went out and saw him during their bye week. I suspect Notre Dame has done a pretty good job there. I think that's his crystal ball went from having zero predictions on it about a month ago to being 100% Notre Dame. They were actually, of his original finalists, they were actually, weirdly enough, were the only ones who were kind of primarily pitching defensive end. I know Michigan's been recruiting that tight end. You know, he plays at De La Salle out in California, the same program that Devin Asiasi played at. De La Salle puts a real premium on actually teaching guys how to play tight end as they would in college. And I think that's why Michigan loves to try to go there and get whoever's playing tight end out there for them. So, you know, because again, Michigan was one of the first two or three offers for Fossey. I mean, this is another guy they've been recruiting forever. But I think as things stand right now, it sounds like he's kind of preferable to playing defense. Again, I think Michigan, you know how they are, like they would, they're not going to say you absolutely have to play tight end. I mean, I'm sure they'd let him try it out on the defensive side if he wanted to. But it sounds like Notre Dame has kind of set their teeth in there. They only have a couple spots left too. And so I don't know if there's a little bit of pressure. They're putting a little pressure on some of these guys that are like, hey, you know, let's get this over with. He still says he's going to take an official visit. I suspect he will follow through and do that. He's been a good kid to cover, but right now I'd probably give the Irish the edge.
All right. Anybody you see kind of moving up or down as their senior seasons have unfolded, just in terms of rankings?
I mean, so we get limited. I have limited input on it, but we are allowed, not allowed. We're given the opportunity to pitch guys that we think should move up. The two guys that I pitched really hard were Trent Jones out of Grayson, the offensive tackle out of Grayson, is a guy I think is having a really good senior season. Was told he's graded out as the highest offensive lineman on that team, which I believe they have four D1 guys on their offensive line, including Wanya Morris, who I think is a five-star. I don't know if he's a five-star across the board, but it's close if not. And so he's a guy that I've maybe pushed a little bit to get that fourth star at least. I suspect that that'll happen. The other guy is George Johnson, the athlete out of Marin County in Florida, is a guy I think's had a really great senior season. It's one of those deals where, like, sometimes they're hesitant to give a bump to a guy who may play receiver in college, was playing quarterback in high school, because it's sometimes can be hard to tell. Kind of how they were with Michael Barrett, like a guy who, to me, I watch Michael Barrett's film and think, I don't care if this guy is playing quarterback. Like, you can just tell this guy knows what to do when he's got the ball in his hands. Kind of get a similar feel with Johnson. Is a guy that I think will be potentially dynamic type playmaker. Again, the same way I feel about Barrett. I think Barrett, once he gets his opportunity, is going to be a player for Michigan. So kind of feel the same way about Johnson. And actually, I know he's already passed the 51st ranked player
no.
in the country. I do think that there's a real chance that Charbonnet moves even further up.
No.
You can't do that. You cannot give a fifth star to a Michigan running back.
No. Well, his composite's 101, and that's only because I think Rivals has him as like the 240th ranked player in the country. We have him at 41st or 44th or something, I believe. You know, I'm sure you guys saw he was the way they're drafting for the Under Armour All-American game this year. He was actually the second overall pick in the game.
Behind Wanya Morris.
And so, which is, I mean, that game is just full of 4- and 5-star prospects, obviously. So I think that camp will probably determine his final ranking. But I suspect that he's going to really impress, and I think he's going to continue to move up. So.
I mean, I think we have a good rapport here, Steve, but this is really stretching it to a breaking point.
I'm sorry. My hands are a little tied.
51 just or nothing.
The composite's out of my hands. Our ranking, we'll see. I don't know if we'll move him up any further, but again, I could say this. Our guys are chomping at the bit to watch him live. I know that because he's one of the highest ranked players I can remember, or took maybe the biggest leap that I can ever remember for a guy that did not go to any of the t-shirt and shorts type camps in the off season. It was all based off of his film. And so I know that those guys are like Barton Simmons and Wilt Fong, those guys are absolutely excited to get to finally watch him in person and evaluate him in person, because they obviously love the film. So kind of out of my hands. Sorry. Wish I could try, but it's funny enough, though. I mean, yeah, he's one of their highest ranked guys, but I think he's one of the ones that has the best chance to move up still for sure.
All right. Steve, do you have a deal going anything at 24/7 currently?
No, not right now, So, yeah, no pitch.
All right. Well, if you want all this information much sooner than we can give it to you on our podcast, 24/7 is the site to subscribe to. Steve is one of their top contributors.
Appreciate that. Yeah, no, it's been fun. It's quite a merge working with Sam and the guys. It's been great. I mean, it's the best of both worlds, in my opinion, for our users. I mean, I don't know what more you'd want than us putting it together every day. Sam just posted a bunch of great stuff on the site today. I had a bunch of stuff earlier in the week, so day-to-day basis. So
yep. All right, thank you, Steve. We will talk to you probably before the early signing day, I would hope.
Yeah, no, anytime, guys. Yeah. You guys know that.
All right, we're gonna take a break, come back and talk Rutgers.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way.
Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
And here's to you, Dinard Robinson. Coach Horn loves you more than you will know.
This is Michigan, for God's sake.
Whoa, whoa. Run if you please, Dinard Robinson.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 4.9 from live from the Bow Store on Main Street. That was definitely an a cappella group.
That was the Glee Club.
My
The Friars, to be specific.
My wife, is her favorite thing in the world is Pitch Perfect. That's not actually true. It's close to true.
Okay.
So we watched it in the hospital when she was in labor with the second child.
Okay.
Anyway, that was not relevant. But no. All we have to talk about now is Rutgers. So
I could talk about what we watched. We caught up on our Marvel movies. All right, I'll talk about Rutgers.
So the thing about Marvel movies is like I feel like I need to like read a dissertation before I watch one. Like I could watch like Infinity War or something, but I haven't watched the 16 movies I need.
Yeah,
to
but
be like, ready for Infinity War. I've watched like two.
That's
of
what
them.
Everyone said about it, and like I missed a whole bunch of the movies before Infinity War, and yeah. I still like you see a character and you can guess pretty quickly what his thing is
because he's Batista,
or he's a very large. I don't know. Do they have a Hulk movie out there? Or is
yeah,
like,
there's a Hulk movie.
All right. Well, Hulk is on a spaceship. Okay, they have a Hulk.
Hulk
on a spaceship.
Hulk is on a spaceship. I need explanation for that.
I don't need an explanation. The Hulk is on a spaceship. That's I guess something. There's probably a whole movie that got Hulk onto a spaceship. I appreciate it was probably a good one too because Marvel just like they have their formula and it works.
It's some of them are bad.
Yeah, we watched Doctor Strange when we were coming. When we had the last one.
That one was all right.
Yeah, that's like the deepest Marvel I can go. I don't watch the TV shows.
Anyway, Rutgers.
All right.
No, actually, let's not. I mean, they're so bad. They're 126th in S&P Plus. I didn't look at anything. I just copied and pasted parts of your FFFF because they're so unbelievably bad. Okay, they do have a 14, a 4-17 touchdown to interception ratio this year. I did I did know that.
Right. Two of them are Rashigno, and the other one are all Artis Sitkowski. Who
was a Michigan recruit for a while. Michigan was like, they had an offer out to him. People
he was the IMG quarterback. But he lost his job at the end of the year to the Minnesota quarterback right now.
Anikstad?
Yeah.
The walk-on?
Yeah, Anikstad was the backup quarterback at IMG.
How do you know this?
Because we were talking about it last, because we were trying to like figure out who Minnesota's quarterback was going to be, and like we started looking up Anikstad, and there he was, and that's what he was.
So, yeah, he's the starting quarterback. He's a true freshman. He's abject.
Bad reads and inaccuracy together do not make... He should have 20 interceptions after this.
But at least he can run.
No. Not at all.
Not at all?
Not even a smidge. I didn't get one, like, break the pocket. You know what he does is he just backs up. He's
pulling the O'Corn.
No, because O'Corn turned around and ran towards his own end zone.
I don't remember it quite like that.
I was in the end zone for Indiana.
I mean, I remember him
in
like
the snow.
Doing the like I'm not very good at Madden drift back the whole time. Is that what?
No, it's not drifting. It's like they have like an 11-step drop for him, and he's just backing up and backing. I mean, you're not going to do that against Winovich and Gary. But
well, they're actually pretty good at preventing sacks because
kind of.
Because all their throws are like little dinks and screens.
And here's the other thing he does. He throws the ball while he's getting hit all the time.
Oh, okay.
So some of the things that should have turned into sacks turned into interceptions.
Did you say snacks?
I'm pretty sure I said
sacks. Okay. I know you said sacks.
We could talk about snacks instead of Rutgers if you like.
We're definitely.
I lied.
So
I watched some of Daredevil.
What?
I watched some
of
Daredevil.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah. It was good. Anyway.
It's on Netflix, it doesn't count.
Speaking of things that are good, they're running back. I like the running back.
They have three running backs.
Nah, they got one, and they have the other guys that they use. Because they use the running back as a slot receiver as well, and he's the punt returner. So like
he's kind of like Chris Evans.
Nah, Chris Evans isn't 5'9", 185. This guy is tiny. Raheem Blackshear.
Chris Evans isn't a whole lot different.
Chris Evans weighs more than Higdon on the roster.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
They have a poor man's Chris Evans, and we can talk about him later. But Raheem Blackshear is not Chris Evans. He is everybody's little tiny running back who's half slot receiver, who literally plays slot receiver for them on like a third of their snaps.
So it's like Chris Evans right out of high school.
Yeah, fine. He's a lot smaller than Chris Evans, and that's why they got to take him
off
the field.
Okay, he's a small Chris Evans.
Anyway, he's really fast.
Why are we being
cuts.
An old married couple about this? Come on.
Because
what else are we going to talk about?
I'm protective of Chris Evans. He's one of my
so their tight ends
players.
Out. Tight end's not going to play. He's the only guy on their team.
Is that official now? He's not going to play?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Official.
Yeah.
So he's the only guy on their team with a yards per catch over 10.
Which.
That's just something I wanted to say out loud.
there. He wasn't that good either. He's just like the bad idea guy.
I know about like 18 yards a catch. That could get him a first down.
Yeah. Anyway, he's but whatever. Jeremy Washington's been there forever. He's gotten a gazillion catches and has never done anything with him. He's
your over under for
Rutgers's?
Just like Rutgers yards.
For how many for Rutgers yards?
Yeah.
100.
That many?
Yep. Because I think, because they got have a fourth quarter against all of our backups. I think they're going to see more Peter Bush than Devin Bush in this one.
I mean, Brown has been kind of weirdly reticent to put in backup back seven players.
I know. Well, we were saying at the end of the Penn State game, I hope Khalik Hudson doesn't get a targeting right now because he was in there like when it was already 35 points.
Well, yeah, like in the final drive, like Bush is in there, Hudson's in there. It's like,
yeah,
maybe Jordan Anthony. I don't know what the deal is. I know that he was like specifically very angry at Penn State. Like Sam told me when I went in for the TKA thing that like players in the locker room were like saying that he said, "Oh, I shouldn't have put in the backups for the last drive." But like he didn't really. Like he put in some backup defense.
No, just call it the backups because now the sad touchdown is more sad if it's against the backups.
Not really. I don't know. It's a bit of a strange thing that's going on because they'll rotate the front four.
Yeah.
And the front four gets rotated so much that it's like who's the starter, who's the backups, but like where's, I don't know. It's
I think that they probably do a lot of the calls in the on the linebacker level.
I know, but
so.
Like you want to get people used to doing that. Like if Anthony is going to be the middle linebacker next year, then it's like, well, we got to get him some reps.
Yeah,
I don't know. Whatever.
Well, we'll see this game how they go in the
Rutgers defense is
better than their offense.
Well, you know,
yeah,
they're literally the worst offense in the country. They're 100. They're 130th on S&P Plus.
Yeah, I can't believe I actually scouted all these guys.
Why did you do that?
Because they're.
I didn't.
They're a Big Ten team.
Like you,
Brian. They're on the schedule. They're on the revenge tour.
They're not a Big Ten team.
We have magnets.
They are on the revenge tour because they're in the conference and they shouldn't be.
There's still a couple links left of the garden the fence that they tried to put up around the garden that we have to, you know, destroy.
But what I'm saying is like you could have just done the P5O films and been like, "Yep, this is Rutgers," and then be done with it. Instead, I like open it up and I just feel terribly sad for you. Because you watched like a whole Rutgers game.
So can I talk about what I saw on this Rutgers
game?
Because
I saw you graded out one of their linebackers at like -21.
He was and I was being nice to him at the end too. Like he was making mistakes. I'm like, it didn't matter in that coverage, so it's okay if that he ran completely the wrong way. My God, this guy's a 3-year starter.
Tweeted at their linebackers coach. I don't think that's very professional. Like I don't think you should have done that.
I watched Rutgers, and anyone who has watched Rutgers has probably done the same thing.
Nobody,
because you get triggered.
You're the only person to watch a whole Rutgers game this year.
No, I'm sure there's probably like there's
Kansas fans.
Yep,
Kansas fans watched that game.
Yeah, they did.
So there's like two guys, you and two other guys.
You don't think Texas State made it through their whole game?
No.
They didn't turn it off. Like who else? Oh, Buffalo. Buffalo or
did Buffalo win?
Buffalo killed them.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
But this linebacker drives me nuts because the rest of the defense might actually have some players on it. Like Chris Ash knows what he's doing with a quarters defense, and he's got the secondary to kind of play it well. He's got guys that I think might start on Michigan State right now.
Their pass defense stats are not appalling.
Yeah, because there's no reason to pass against
them.
They're
just bad. But their run defense is completely garbage.
Yeah, and you can push the defensive linemen off the ball.
And linebackers don't fit gaps.
And linebackers are just terrible. So I hate bringing up Mouton and Ace as an OB again, but these guys are like extreme versions of those two. Because the middle linebacker just runs at anything that's shiny. And he'll cross the other linebacker all the time because the little linebacker is just kind of sitting there diagnosing and tweeting his thumbs. And I don't know, maybe I wouldn't be surprised if like we got tweets from him in the middle of games sometimes because he's just standing there.
The linebacker.
The linebacker.
You're tweeting from the field.
Yeah. He's probably tweeting. I'm adding him during the game because I'm so mad at him standing around. He's probably like replying to me at that. Like, don't you have something better to do, fan?
I'm pretty
this
sure.
This is my relationship with Trevor Morris.
I'm pretty sure you're kidding. Please do not at Rutgers linebackers.
I'm not adding the Rutgers linebackers.
I was pretty sure you were kidding.
I'm kidding. I would not at the linebacker because I put the coach, man.
Don't at the coach either.
No, there's one time, and I admitted to it to everybody that I.
Because if they reply to you, that is an infection vector, and then you will have the Rutger.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a good point, right?
That. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't want.
Didn't think about that. Time to have the thingy go up and down. Notebook.
Yeah. Do we? Their special teams, they're all right.
Okay, I literally didn't look at their special teams. I was just
so, like, Aussie punter.
Okay.
Who is like a good, decent Aussie punter. He's been doing well this year. Their kicker is 8 for 10 and takes a couple 50-yard shots. So,
all right, yeah. Now we're talking.
Yeah, and
there's
then like,
some real sad field goal potential in this one.
Yeah, and then there's Raheem Blackshear, too, who returns the punts, and you know you have to keep him contained. So you might want to just don't punt to that guy and then take your chances with their offense, who are so terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Also, you know, they have Bo Melton. I'm waiting for him to make like a pretty cool catch that they get on because all of his plays are like getting downfield, does a little OPI that you get away with to get some separation, and then doesn't catch the ball. And one of those times he's going to catch one of those, and it's going to look pretty cool because a 5'9 guy just got a big long pass. But he was a guy that Michigan was in on. Remember, he was a 4-star.
They were poking around him. Yeah, he was like kind of a low 4-star.
If we didn't have like
wasn't
all the
bros with like Amir Mitchell or something, and then
yeah, he was on this team with Amir Mitchell, and like
and Mitchell was like, and Michigan was like, maybe no Amir Mitchell bros. Just keep playing it safe.
Amir Mitchell is not on Rutgers anymore.
I wonder where he is. I bet he's at the same place Juan Harris is. The island of misfit recruits.
No, Juan Harris can't stick around long enough for, like, you know, any of that. I don't know where I was going with that sentence. This is our Rutgers preview, everybody.
Let's take our last break and then come back and find something to talk about.
More Rutgers!
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor, downtown.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 4.9 live from the Bow Store on Main Street. We have decided that instead of talking about Rutgers, we will talk about hoops and hockey because those teams have both started their seasons and we haven't really addressed either of them.
And they're playing tougher competition.
Yes. In hockey's case, they're playing Notre Dame tonight, so that is much tougher competition.
Yeah.
They've had kind of an alarming start to the season where they're giving up four goals to the Canadian team they play every year.
Right.
And that's a pretty bad sign. They give up six to the USA teams. They give up, I think, nine in a weekend to Western Michigan. It's
all right, so we haven't been able to watch a lot of these because, like, a lot of the games have not been televised. And that's usually my way of getting the hockey because I don't live in town, so I have to.
Right, like the Lake State, like you can stream it for $75 or you could not.
It was literally $30 they wanted you to pay to get their thing for a month, and I'm like, I'm not going to watch Lake Superior State for a month.
Yeah, it's the state of, like, streaming in college hockey is still pretty parlous.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit concerned though because this is a team that returned almost the entirety of their defensive core. They've got Hughes, they've got Ciccone, they've got Nicholas Boca, they've got Griffin Luce back. I mean, they have five guys who are veteran defenders, and they're really not playing too well, and part of that is Hughes.
But
is
the first, I think the first line's fine.
The first pairing?
Yeah.
I mean, I've been pretty disappointed in Boca in particular because he's made a lot of rookie errors. Like there was one goal that Michigan gave up where he's flying up the boards and there's a opposition player on the boards with the puck, mm-hmm. and he comes up way too tight to the boards and the guy just spins into the slot and passes it across for a one-timer, just a dunk. And I'm like, why? You're a senior. Like, it's been a problem. Their defensive shape is not great and their goaltending has not helped them out. So,
yeah, I don't know how much to blame the goaltending because, I mean, just at least the ones we've seen at Yost have been mostly defenders not checking a guy. And
I mean, most of the goals that Levine has given up have been, you know, they haven't been howlers. But at the same time, his save percentage is so low and, like, the number of grade A stops he's making is very minimal. So, like, there at some point, any goalie with, like, an 850 that's
right.
not on the defense around him.
Right.
So, like, and then they've been trying Strauss Mann. They haven't really had much more success with him. And, I mean, we'll see. I think they'll get it figured out, but to have this kind of defensive issue early is a little bit alarming. Like, they've been able to score some goals, but my expectations for this season are ratcheted down. And it's like, again, like, okay, let's please try to make the tournament.
Yeah.
That's it. And that's a little disappointing.
I think last year, because they went so far in the tournament, kind of set expectations a little. Last year was supposed to be the year one, and I was not expecting them to make the championship game. And then when they did, I think
they
they
did not make the championship game.
the Frozen Four. They didn't make the championship. No, you know what I mean.
I have a distinct memory of them not making the championship.
Yes. They made the Frozen Four.
Thank you.
And that was not expected in the first year. And they bring back Hughes. And, you know, we thought before Michigan hockey summer came along and took its toll, which is another tough toll again. But I think that this team feels very front heavy. So I think, like, the first couple lines are good. And, like,
Top heavy. Okay.
Yeah, like, sorry. Well, the Norris line, their top line is great. And, you know, Pashulov's line is wonderful. I think they've been coming ever since they got put back together. They look great together, but like they don't have a checking line. And they don't really have. I don't know. I think the bad things seem to happen when the other guys are out there. And the same with the defense.
I mean, the defense shouldn't have that issue. Is kind of the problem. Is like you should have a third pairing that's able to like go head to head with other teams' bottom pair. It hasn't really happened. I mean, the power play's been really good. They've had to struggle through some games where, like that loss to Lake State, they had 9 penalties that they had to kill. They killed them all. They got 1 power play. They gave up a shorthand goal on it. So it's like just some stuff you got to work through early in the season. But this series against Notre Dame is going to be a very big one because this is a team that is going to be in the top 10 probably in RPI for the most of the season. And you get bonus points for beating these teams. Right. So, you know, these kind of games are the games that if you can bank them early in the season really give you a lot of leeway. Don't know that we're going to see just because they've been so scatterbrained on defense. And one thing a Jeff Jackson team is not is scatterbrained on defense. They will be.
Right.
Extremely disciplined, and if Michigan gives up more than 2 goals, they're probably going to lose this game. So are they in a position to give up fewer than 3 goals? It doesn't really feel like it. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, the hope for this team is that they're going to kind of beeline like the beginning of the season and then come together maybe after the Christmas break because, like, there are a lot of issues going on with it, but there's still a good team here that might – pop out. There's just some guys that are just not quite getting there yet.
Speaking of John Beilein, John Beilein's team had that season opener against Norfolk State.
The Spartans.
In a game where they won by 19 against a MEAC foe, which is usually not a real great sign, but we won at 63-44, and it feels like every single one of Norfolk State's shots was a prayer that got answered, and Michigan is under 50% from the free throw line, and they don't shoot very well for the whole game. And, you know, Brez Dykus is getting looks at the bucket and they're just not going down. I'm not too fussed about that. I felt like, you know, there's always kind of those opening season jitters. And what I'd like to see is an ability to create shots on offense, not necessarily make shots. And I felt like this team was well ahead of where most Beilein teams are in terms of, I know the offense, there's a lot of flow, we get good shots.
Yeah. That was a terrible game to start the season with because it was just it was just sloppy on the shoot, just bad shooting. Like, and I think they were getting it was building on itself, and then they were fouling Charles Matthews because he just could not hit a free throw for the life of him. So it was just if that game came as the third game of the season, it'd be like, okay, whatever, they slept through that one. But
it's the
only thing that we've seen so far of this team. It's just like where's my good basketball?
Well, I mean, the good parts were that, you know, the defense was locked in from the jump, and Teske really felt like an impact defender. And, you know, the guys he's going up against are the guys who's just going to block all their shots. But it kind of felt like Teske was going to be a rim protector that I don't think Michigan has seen in the Beilein era. I mean, you had kind of the Mitch McGarry phase.
Yeah.
But that was fairly brief because he never really had a full season at Michigan where he's playing a lot. And this feels like, you know, he's going to be on the court probably 30 minutes a night. He's going to be looming the whole time. And I think that that bodes well for Michigan's defense maintaining where it was last year because you can't do much better than that. I mean, they were 3rd in the country last year.
Yeah, I thought Eli Brooks actually looked pretty good too. It was like I know we've heard a bunch of him over the end of the offseason.
Well, he hit a couple threes, which is going to be important for this team having bench shooters. Yeah, he looked like he was more in command of the offense. And, of course, he's a guy who came in as a point guard under Beilein in year 1, looked like he had never seen a basketball before, and then surprise in year 2, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
So,
well, that was nice to see just because the way his career was tracking at the end by the end of last year and to see some of that pay off. Well, and yeah, like you said, Teske is just he's altering everything down there. Like, Norfolk State is not the kind of team that could really score against Michigan anyway, but it looked dominant down there anytime they went near him.
Yes, sir. So you have a score prediction for the Rutgers game?
Well, 78-0 has already literally happened there before.
I picked 79-0 because I think this team's a little bit better than 2016.
Yeah, but, man. I don't, yeah, 60-0.
60?
60. I'm going down to 60. I think that, like...
You're a hater. You're a hater.
Point a minute.
Hater.